If it could be done to John F. Kennedy in 1963, it could be done to another president in the future. And we can't afford to have coup d'etats in America, no matter how cleverly orchestrated and sinisterly contrived they may be. That cannot be permitted to happen. And the way in which you prevent that from happening is to expose those elements of government and society in this country that were responsible for the killing of John F. Kennedy.
Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. It's ironic that we're doing a series of podcasts on the research heroes of the JFK assassination. This past week, we lost one of those heroes. There's not many researchers left that started investigating the assassination from day one, but Dr. Cyril Wett was one of those.
Breaking news as we come on the air at noon. KDKA confirms that nationally known pathologist and Pittsburgh native Cyril Wett has died. He was 93 years old. KDKA lead investigator Andy Sheehan joins us live in studio with those details. Andy.
Well, that's right, Erica. Cyril Weck was a larger-than-life public figure who made his impact nationally and locally in the fields of politics, medicine, and forensic pathology, conducting thousands of autopsies and weighing in on high-profile cases such as the Kennedy assassination and the deaths of celebrities. Never a shrinking violet, he dove straight into controversy and express his opinions no matter how controversial. He was born in Pittsburgh. He served as a captain in the U.S. Air Force and earned degrees in both medicine and law. He became Allegheny County's first chief medical examiner, and he was also a major political figure, serving as the county commissioner and the county Democratic chairman. Through the years, he gained a national reputation as a severe critic of the Warren Commission's finding that JFK was killed by a lone assassin, testifying before Congress and disputing the so-called magic bullet theory.
Here's an interview where Dr. Cyril Wett gives his opinion on the magic bullet.
The infamous magic bullet. We have that bullet exiting from President Kennedy's neck, moving forward and leftward and downward. It now stops in midair. It turns to the right. It comes back a full 18 inches, stops again, and then slams into John Connally's back. It continues downward. And it goes through his wrist, and somehow they get that right wrist over to the left thigh. If you look at the Zapruder film, you'll see in the individual frames that John Connally's right wrist is not near John Connally's left thigh. The significance of this, the importance, cannot be exaggerated. It is impossible to overstate it. Why? Because the single bullet theory is the sine qua non of the Warren Commission report. It's not a matter of how much weight and credibility do you give to it. It's a matter of whether or not you have a single bullet theory that permits you to conclude that there was only one person firing, whether it was Oswald or anybody else in the world. If you don't have a single bullet theory, then you cannot have a sole assassin. And if you move to that point, then you're into conspiracy by definition. And that's why it had to stop with Oswald as a sole assassin. And that's why they came up with a single bullet theory. There's no question in my mind that that 26-volume set should be taken from the shelves of all the libraries where they now rest in the United States from nonfiction and placed in the fiction shelves along with Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, and Gulliver's Travels. That's where they belong.
Something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route. There's numerous people running up the hill alongside Elm Street, there by the Simmons Freeway. Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
This just in from Dallas, Homicide Chief Captain Will Fritz said today the assassination case against Lee Harvey Oswald is cinched. He said flatly, "This is the man that killed President Kennedy, 24-year-old Lee Harvey Oswald."
the president?
No, they're taking me in because of the fact that I live in Missouri. I'm just a patsy.
Scott, Lee Oswald has been shot. There's the man with a gun.
It was August 1972, and the president's brain was missing. Dr. Cyril Wecht had been allowed to examine the evidence of President John F. Kennedy's assassination held in the National Archives. A critic of the official assassination report by the Warren Commission, Wecht said it would be impossible to answer questions about what happened to the president in Dallas without his preserved brain and the microscopic slides of tissue from the bullet wounds. But he had discovered that they were missing from the archive, so Wecht raised the alarm and made international headlines.
If the brain was not sectioned, then there could be no visualization of its interior. It's as if it never existed. I am very, very suspicious, and I do think that it could have been the height of a sinister conspiratorial activity in the post-assassination cover-up in this case to make sure that the brain was not examined in order to be able to disprove or at least to be able to withhold the attempts by other people, me and other critics, to prove that there was a second gunman firing from the right side. Because again, you see, that gets to the question of whether or not there was a conspiracy.
Dr. Cyril Wecht, a passionate man who for decades pursued the truth of the JFK assassination with unparalleled vigor and tenacity. Wecht first spoke about the assassination of President Kennedy in 1965 after being invited to an American Academy of Forensic Scientists conference, where he presented a paper critical of the Warren Commission's official finding that a lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald, had shot the president. Wecht pursued the JFK case tirelessly for the next 60 years while serving as a certified forensic pathologist, the coroner for Allegheny County in Pittsburgh, the founder of the Cyril Wecht Institute of Forensic Science and Law at DeQuinn University. Wecht said that the government's account of JFK's murder was an unscientific sham. I had the pleasure of doing an interview with Dr. Cyril Wecht back in 2015. It was then he shared with me his biggest concerns about the case. First, he said the official autopsy was very much controlled, including its physicians, Dr. James Humes and Dr. J. Thornton Boswell.
Humes and Boswell were in charge of hospital pathology at Bethesda, just like a hospital pathologist in civilian life. They had had no formal training or experience or practice in forensic pathology. It was incredible that Humes and Boswell should have been selected to perform this autopsy. There were, we know, about 33 people officially logged in the autopsy room that night. We know that there was an admiral, there was a general, there were FBI and Secret Service people. And these people, Humes and Boswell, were career military people, just a couple of years shy of retirement. They were not about to stand up and say to their superior officers, we're gonna do it our way. No way would they say that. So we see that Humes and Boswell were indeed controlled, and we know from their own records that they, Humes and Boswell, were not professionally competent and expert in the realm of forensic pathology. And that's how you got a botched, horribly inadequate, inept, inadequate, superficial medical legal autopsy in the case of John F. Kennedy.
Dr. Wecht believed that manipulation of the evidence did not end with the legal autopsy. The National Archives in Washington received a metal tray containing all the vital medical materials relating to the Kennedy assassination, including the president's brain. An inventory check 3 years after the assassination revealed that these items had vanished in that inventory.
In that inventory of October 30th, 1966, that metal tray containing the brain and the Kodachromes and the microscopic autopsy tissue slides are no longer listed. So somewhere between April of 65 and the end of October 66, these things were literally taken, illegally stolen, removed from the National Archives. And to this day, as we sit and talk, nobody in the United States government has ever accounted for these missing items. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what this would mean in a routine murder case? I can tell you, as a forensic pathologist testifying in a courtroom, if I came in a murder that, you know, not many people cared about, and the other side was asking, where is the brain, and did you examine it, and what did you find, and so on, and I said, well, I chose not to examine it. Where is it? Can you examine it today, or our experts want to examine it? Well, I don't have it any longer. It was discarded, or so on. You know what would happen to that case, probably? The judge would throw it out of the courtroom. But in this case, the government hasn't been concerned, and my colleagues in forensic pathology were not concerned, and yet there's not one of them would ever tolerate that kind of aberrant, unacceptable, unethical, immoral, and illegal procedure or policy in his own office. Not one of them. But in this case, it just rolls off their back, along with the acceptance of the single bullet theory and all the other things.
Dr. Cyril Wett believed till the day he died that the real truth could still be found in who shot JFK.
I think it would still be possible, even today, to determine how, in fact, John Kennedy was killed, to be able to prove that there were two people firing. I would like to see a real murder investigation conducted. I would like to see FBI agents and other law enforcement people going to individuals who were involved in the chain of custody, find out where the brain is, find out where the Kodachromes of the interior chest wounds are, find out where the microscopic tissue slides are. I would like to see all of the evidence brought together and a thorough scientific analysis undertaken. I would also like to see repeat experiments done shooting a Mannecker Carcano with 6.5mm military-type ammunition through goat carcasses and human cadavers to simulate the bony fractures in Governor John Connally. And let's see what those bullets look like. Those things can be done. If they are done, then I am convinced that the Warren Commission report will crumble like a house of cards. And, of course, the people on the other side, they're not stupid. They are also convinced that that is what would happen, and that is exactly why such a new investigation is not being undertaken.
I had the honor and privilege to sit down and interview Dr. Cyril Wett on several occasions, with the last being in 2015. He and I exchanged dozens and dozens of emails and text messages over the years about the case. I actually still have a voicemail on my phone that he sent me in August of 2023 when he heard that I was working on a new book about my research on the case. He was always very encouraging to younger researchers and told me to keep digging for the truth. A conversation I had with Dr. Wett back in November of 2003 at Duquesne University will always stick with me. At that time in my life, I was looking to take a brief hiatus from my research. My two boys were getting old enough to be involved in sports and other activities, and I didn't want to miss anything they were involved in. I don't remember everything about my conversation with Dr. Wett that night, but looking back now, I wish I did. I do remember him shaking my hand, and as he turned to walk away from me, he winked at me and said, "They're only young ones, and you can't get these times in your life back. Go be with your family." Later that evening, I had the pleasure of being in the audience and listening to Dr. Wett speak at Duquesne University about the Kennedy assassination and his research. It was the 40th anniversary of JFK's murder, and Dr. Wett was as good as I'd ever heard him that night. I just want to play for you some of the highlights of his speech that night. "The JFK assassination research community truly lost a hero. May God rest his soul."
It is my deep pleasure and honor to introduce the Richard Gibb keynote speaker this evening, my dear friend and our dear colleague for more than 40 years, Dr. Cyril H. Wecht.
We extend a warm and grateful welcome. But I think the most warming feeling that I have is to those young people who are here tonight who were not alive, obviously, and who have been busy, understandably and properly, with any number of things that have occurred in this country. To see young people who have this kind of an interest is indeed very gratifying. And it means a lot substantively as we begin to dwell upon this subject. And it is the best possible segue into the discussion. Why are we here assembled? What is this all about? 4 decades? Isn't this enough? Don't we know everything that we can know? I have been asked repeatedly by good, intelligent, appreciative, friendly, sympathetic members of the news media. What is its purpose? What does it mean? The fact that young people today in America continue to want to hear about the JFK assassination. In some high schools and colleges and universities, there are courses devoted to this. And the requests come in for speaking engagements, I'm sure, to every one of the critic researchers in this room, repeatedly, from all levels of society, to come and address this subject. Therein lies the answer. Yes, maybe we'll take a little bit of credit collectively because we have continued to talk and write about this. But could we have forced a subject? Could we have accomplished something if there weren't a deeper feeling to draw upon? I'm asked, what is the remaining controversy? What is it all about? How did things come to happen in this way? Why can't we know more? Well, let's take a journey back through history and let's think about things as they occurred. And let me say at this point, and I may repeat it, while this is, as the title says, solving the great American murder mystery, obviously a program devoted primarily, and I say that without any hesitation or embarrassment, directed toward primarily a critique of the Warren Commission, the very subject that got me drawn into this 38 and a half years ago. We are going to have opinions expressed by very erudite, sagacious, intelligent people on the other side. And we reached out for more of them, I want you to know that, who are believers in the Warren Commission, and for one reason or another, this one couldn't make it, and that one declined, and so on. It isn't that we felt we had to have a balanced program, an even-handed approach, 50-50 right down the line, but we did reach out for others. And this is going to be a program that is going to be conducted with dignity, with decorum, and people are going to have a right to express their views, and we want to hear from everybody, and we shall. Because I believe that even those people who believe that the Warren Commission got it right somehow, as intelligent people, as forensic scientists, as attorneys, as criminal investigators, whatever you will, or just as interested American citizens, you've got to acknowledge, and these people, the honest ones with a sense of morality and ethics and personal decency, have acknowledged all of these faults and deficiencies. Well, if that be true, then why can't we look into this matter? Why should we walk away from it? So the idea that, gee, is this some kind of a ghoulish endeavor? But what I hope is that even people on the other side and come to realize, hey, if it is this simple, if it is this straightforward, let's get to it. And let's see all of those sequestered records, those obfuscated reports, those missing documents, the x-rays and the photographs that were recorded but somehow are not around. Let's go back to November 22nd, 1963. Let's see who's responsible for the morass that exists. Let's see who is at fault for the problems that remain with us. Is it the critic researchers, those of us who are gathered here tonight? Were we responsible for the selection of two pathologists, Humes and Boswell, who had never done a single gunshot wound autopsy in their entire careers to do the post-mortem examination on our president? I am repulsed by that, just as a citizen of America, and admittedly, perhaps more so as a forensic pathologist, to call in two people who had never done a gunshot wound autopsy to do this autopsy. Yes, they brought in Pierre Fink as an afterthought, an Army man in the naval setting arriving in RLA. And Pierre, the one person that I did know personally, a very decent guy. And Pierre was largely limited to military type stuff over in Vietnam, reviewing the cases. He had very little hands-on experience, and they did not do autopsies at the AFIP. And when Pierre had the audacity to open up his mouth and he asked, and I can close my eyes, I wasn't there, but I never picked up this punctilious Swiss gentleman, and he said in that crisp tone of his, who is in charge here? And a gruff voice from the audience came forward and said, I am, just proceed, doctor. Four-star admirals and generals in the room that night, 36, 40 people. That was a scientific endeavor. It was a controlled military operation. That's what it was. And who was responsible for that? What about the car and the blood? Would there have been some tissue? Could they have learned something from examining the car? You think the Allegheny County or Pittsburgh homicide detectives or the coroner's office forensic scientists or any of my people are going to allow somebody to go in and begin to wash the car? Immediately begin to scrub the blood and the tissue? No kind of investigation is conducted? A defect in the windshield? We got to take that car to Detroit and get a whole new windshield quickly. Governor Connally's clothing? Oh, my God. We got to get it to the dry cleaners, and the shirt has to be cleaned. That's going to happen in your community? Those of you who come from 40 other states or 9 other countries or any other part of this state? No way. Who did that? Who was responsible for that? And then let us proceed. Who made the decision to take the body of the president out of Dallas? There was a board-certified forensic pathologist, a medical examiner, Earl Rose, right there. And I am certain that if Earl Rose had done the autopsy, and I don't say this tout Earl, any one of us experienced today, we were just kids then, but I mean our predecessors, as a board-certified forensic pathologist functioning properly, quietly, privately, in a medical examiner coroner's office, would have done this autopsy, and we would not be here convened this evening. To spirit that body in violation of the laws of Dallas and the state of Texas and take it to Washington, D.C.? They even thought for a while maybe there would not be an autopsy. And then they made the decision, well, we'll do it at Bethesda. Who made that decision? And then let's move on after that. The investigation that took place. The Warren Commission. How about Jack Ruby coming into the Dallas Public Safety Building? Warren Commission told us, he just walked down the back ramp. That's right. And all the Texas Rangers and FBI and Secret Service and Dallas uniformed and non-uniformed cops, they just stood there as Jack walked in. Any one of you in Dallas that day, vacationing or living or visiting, you too could have been part of history because you too could have just walked down the back ramp and you would have been there when Oswald walked through with the two huge non-uniformed detectives on either side of him. We came to learn later on, of course, that that was not the case. That is not how Jack Ruby got in. Other people could learn this, but indeed not the Warren Commission. And who then was responsible for what followed and flowed thereafter? Let's talk about the memorandum of transfer. Admiral George Berkeley, April 26, 65, I believe was the date, in which he itemized all the things that he submitted to the National Archives. And included in there clearly is the container with the brain, the microscopic glass autopsy tissue slides, photos of the internal chest wounds, microscopic slides of the entrance wounds or exit wounds on the skin, whatever they might have been. April 26, 1965. Who was responsible then for the absence of these items 1.5 years later? In that year and a half, guess what happened? They made a decision, and darn it, I must confess with much embarrassment to all of you, and I hope that it will not be a legally offensible crime for which I shall be incarcerated, that we have failed to follow suit. We have failed abysmally, ignorantly, and unsympathetically to do with what they established as policy. We have failed in the Allegheny County Coroner's Office, in all of our homicides, to put together the bloody clothing, the knife, the gun, the bludgeon, whatever it was, wrap them all up, put them together in a package with a blue ribbon, call in the widow and say, Mrs. Jones, we'd like you to have this. This belongs to you. This is your personal property, a bit of memorabilia for your husband's murder. That was the decision. Did the critics and the researchers do that? Or did the United States government do that? All of these things belong to Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy so that she could make this constructive transfer. Jackie didn't want it, Jackie didn't need it, and Jackie never saw it, and Jackie never took it home. It was there. But 1.5 years later, it wasn't there. On October 31st, 1966, when they now went over to do the inventory on this constructive transfer, those things are not there. Did the government know about this? Yes. Did the critic researchers know about it? No. And then there was the Clay Shaw trial in New Orleans. And Jim Garrison, sure. Jim was a bit of flamboyant. Was he neurotic? Perhaps, was he a grandstander? Because anything you want to. I've said worse about a lot of prosecutors. You know, that goes with the turf. Did he have a right to look into the case of Clay Shaw? And you'll hear about this over the next 3 days. Who was responsible for every move he made, every request he submitted? He was thwarted. He was stymied. He was blocked. He was ridiculed. He was embarrassed. He was treated in the most denigrating, hostile fashion. Who did that? Do you know how prosecutors get along with each other? When I'm going to testify in a murder case for the defense in some state 1,500 miles away, that prosecutor gets in touch with the district attorney in Allegheny County. He wants to find out about me. Oh, they're a very close fraternity. But when Jim Garrison, the district attorney of a huge city, in a case of this importance, made simple requests, what do you know about Lee Harvey Oswald? What do you know about David Ferry? What do you know about this one and so on? No response. Or we can't give you anything or so on. Who was responsible for that? If there was nothing to hide and Oswald's now dead and gone, what's the problem? What's the difficulty? Put it out there. Lay it out. And when I testified before Federal Judge Charles Halleck Jr. in January of 69, because I had been consulted by Garrison, and I told him, I got to see the materials. I can't come and testify unless I see the autopsy. I testified, and Judge Halleck ruled that very day from the bench that the government had to let me get in there. The government attorney stood up and blatantly, boldly, almost insultingly to the judge said that they would appeal until hell froze over to keep me out. What was the problem? If it was so clear cut, then what is the problem? And then we see, of course, the House Select Committee on Assassinations. And we'll hear all about that. And how many people here, aside from the in crowd, how many people know the House Select Committee on Assassinations, established by the United States Congress, concluded that there was a conspiracy, a high degree of likelihood, whatever the exact words were? And I want to comment on that a little bit later on. But that was their conclusion. So what does that mean? The United States Congress, they arrive at that conclusion? Has there been any follow-up? What's the sequel to that? Was that an academic exercise? Was that an undertaking designed for futility? That's the conclusion they arrive at, and it's left hanging. And then, of course, let's jump to Oliver Stone. Do you remember? I recall vividly, 3 months before his movie came out, he was being savaged in the newspapers, the New York Times. They were dissecting Oliver Stone. You would have thought that this guy had committed the greatest crime in the world. In the meantime, every movie script writer and director can do what they want to, put words in anybody's mouth. Not Oliver Stone, though. Oh, no. How does he know what anybody said? How does he know what Senator Russell Long said on the airplane? What was that great line, this dog won't hunt? I mean, I don't know. Did Russell Long say that? It's a damn good line. I'd expect a southern gentleman from Louisiana to utter something like that, especially when it comes from the mouth of Walter Matthau. He made it sound so real. But I mean, was that so horrible? What did he do? The man was literally crucified. Were the critic researchers responsible for that? If it's just a straightforward murder case, the reason for these historical observations is to point out to you, when the news media talks today, how could this have been? I want to remind the news media, here's a whole new world. Before Vietnam and Watergate, you people were asleep at the switch. The government told you anything, and they got away with anything. The point I make is that when you think of that case, and you say, hey, how could it have been? And news media today say, gee, I don't really believe this, and so on. Think, In 1963, news media game in America was a totally different game, for better or for worse. Maybe it's gotten a little too far. You know, we talk about the assassination and try to understand it, why it took place, and why might it have occurred. And may I point out to you again, you got to know what the facts were. What was going on? What was happening nationally, internationally? Did we have a real Cold War with Russia? And then how about the Vietnam War? It's beginning to blossom and burgeon, and there's Laos and Cambodia. Hey, maybe we might give that a second thought. Maybe we'll get the hell out of there and come on back home. And home, yeah. What about all those blacks in the South that fought just like white troops fought in World War II and got killed? What about all those blacks that can't go in the restaurants, can't go in the theaters? Those were the things that were happening when you want to try to understand this case. They talk about the single bullet, and you bring back to me one bullet. Not 1%, not 100th, not 1,000th. One bullet that has ever done what you claim this bullet did. The next day, thinking that a bullet traveling 2,100 feet per second going through 6 inches of soft tissue in the neck would see the starch white collar of the president get frightened to death and plop absolutely dead right in his tracks. And then 5 months later, that bullet now having been reinvigorated and having been restored with full vibrancy and energy now has picked itself up out of the front of his clothing, gone through Conley's chest, gone through Conley's wrist, and into Conley's left thigh. It's a hell of a bullet. It is indeed the magic bullet. It happily and readily accommodates you. Whatever you need, and whatever point in time, it will do that for you. And I hope that my colleagues even, and my friends and others on that side will recognize that, yes, there are things that still can be done. Let's put an end to this stuff then, so there won't be a 50th anniversary. And we'll show once and for all the critic researchers that we got it right. But to those of us who are among the 80 to 85% of the American public, they continue consistently to reject the Warren Commission report. Yes, despite all of the establishment news media people, despite the Dan Rathers and the Peter Jennings, the people whose careers and reputations bloomed and blossomed and emanated from their coverage in those years, they're not about to back off from that. These are news media megalomaniacs, egocentric people to the ultimate degree. They're going to choke and swallow and renege and rescind on that. Yeah, sure, you wait for hell to freeze over before that'll ever happen. 80 to 85% of the Americans, including the high school kids who are here tonight, are going to continue to reject the Warren Commission. Is that hard science? No, it's not hard science. But you tell me how many subjects you can think of in America that have 80 to 85% of Americans consistently, repeatedly, over decades, voting the same way. Black, white, North, South, Catholic, Protestant, Jew, North, you name it, South, whatever religion, whatever group, you name it. There aren't 85% of people who think that baseball is a good sport. There aren't 85% of people who think that sex is a good idea. And you got 85%. So it is there. And all of the apologists are not going to make it go away. And why can't we then allow it to go away? I'll tell you why. My thought in closing, because it wasn't just a murder. Well, even then you say, hey, but aren't there unsolved murders? Yes, there are. But not of presidents. Not of presidents, of you and me, and of our neighbors and our friends and our relatives, yes, but not of presidents. Oh, okay, so he was a president, he was an important man, but so what? The so what of it is, we know, my friends, and it came to be known darn soon that the Russians and the Chinese and the Cubans, individually or collectively, did not orchestrate this assassination. The plans did not emanate, did not spring from the fertile Machiavellian malevolent minds of the people in Moscow and Beijing and Havana. It came to be known darn soon that Americans were behind this. That's painful, very, very painful indeed. Oswald's dead. He's been executed by Jack Ruby. It's all over. This guy, 2.5 years in Russia, communist sympathizer, not a very likable person. It's over, man. Johnson wants that report. Get it in. Hurry up. Finish it. Wrap it up smoothly. Do you think for one moment whatever any of us here tonight may think about J. Edgar Hoover, and I know what 90% of us probably think about J. Edgar Hoover and about Lyndon Johnson, were there two more knowledgeable, politically savvy, powerful individuals in America? Was there anything in America that if they wanted to find out, they could not have found out? If J. Edgar Hoover wanted to find out how many times you had sex with your wife, how many times you went to the bathroom, whether you carry your lunch to work, I guarantee you he would have put on 60 or 100 FBI agents and he would have found out. My point simply is, well, I don't believe, and my critic researcher friends, one or more of them may believe otherwise, I don't believe that Hoover or Johnson had anything to do with the primary conspiracy to kill Kennedy. Do I believe that they came to know everything later on? You bet your life. There's no way in the world that those two people would not have come to know. But that was not the time to get into things, because who knows who was responsible. But what our purpose is to seek truth, to seek justice, and to come to know and to recognize what happened on November 22nd, 1963. What happened, my friends, was simply the assassination of a president who was so powerful, so charismatic, wealthy, connected. There was no way in the world that he could be defeated at the polls. And I don't speak as a Democrat. This is not the purpose of this symposium. We know that there are people to the right and people to the left, and this is a mixed bag on this whole Kennedy assassination. There's no one particular political group that lines up one way or another. The point simply is that that was one kind of politics, 5 more years of which were to follow with Jack, and 8 more years of which were to be followed by Bobby Kennedy. And if you were not of a mind to see the kinds of changes that maybe could be anticipated, whether they would have come to fruition or not, I don't know. You'll hear from people who are more historical scholars than I, whether or not there would have been a warming with Russia, whether there would have been a detente with Cuba, whether there would have been a withdrawal from Vietnam. The point is, it could have been reasonably anticipated over those next 13 years. And it wasn't a ball game. You weren't going to sit back and say, hey, they're up at bat. Wait till we get up there, man. You'll see how many runs we score. No way in the world was that going to be allowed. There was only one way to bring back the kind of America that you believe should exist, and not the kind of America, not down that windy, treacherous road that Jack Kennedy and his brother Bobby were leading us. And the execution is what is necessary, because there is no other way. And the assassination of the president was the overthrow of the government. And my friends, the world over, what it has been known and called and labeled everywhere but in America, it was a coup d'etat. That's what happened in America. And that is why we must still find out, if it takes another 40 years, what happened on November 22nd, 1963. Thank you.